Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Karema Mutlu. And on today's show, we have David Brady, who's a money manager and CEO and co-founder of the site globalprotraders.com. Welcome to the show, David.
Hey, Karem. Thanks for so much for having me on.
Let's start by talking a little bit about your background and the markets you cover. I understand you cover stocks, bonds, precious metals, and commodities. Tell us a little bit about how you began your career and what led you to focus on these markets.
Well, I've been managing money now for over 25 years. I started out as a spot dollar Deutschmark trader. I'm giving away my age with that one. In Ireland. And since then, I've managed FX risks and fixed income investments in the billions for major US multinationals such as eBay, Salesforce.com. I've covered almost every sector in my career, stocks, bonds, FX, commodities, precious metals, futures, you name it. I've always been interested in financial markets, taking part in stock picking and FX trading competitions when I was a teenager. And the logical next step for me was to get a business degree with a financial market specialty and a trading job straight out of college. My career just went from there, Karem. When asked why I enjoy financial markets so much, that's an easy answer for me. I love the dynamic nature of the market so much. There's always something happening from one day to the next. I have my finger on the pulse of everything that's going on in the world today. And everything I do and see applies to everyday life. Should I buy a house now? Should I lock in a mortgage rate? Should I buy stocks, stay in cash, buy gold and silver? You know, I consider these questions myself, but I get them all the time from my family, friends, and followers. I truly enjoy being able to help others in any way that I can. That's why I set up globalprotraders.com as well.
Excellent. So, David, how is the gold and silver sector looking to you today? The $1,300 area for gold appears to be key to a lot of traders and investors who have been following the space. On a long-term chart, we could suggest that gold is now approaching a potential breakout after a multi-year basing pattern. What are your thoughts? And is the $1,300 area key for you when you look at this market?
Okay, great question. Now we're in my wheelhouse, the primary market I focus on these days. Look, no one knows for sure where the markets are headed, medium term, long term, but I have some concrete opinions on this. I use a process we'll get into later called my FIPES process, which stands for Fundamentals, Intermarket Analysis, Positioning, Elliott Waves, which includes Fibonacci levels, sentiment, and technicals. So starting with fundamentals, I'm a weekly contributor to Sprott Money's online blog, and I've said repeatedly since July that I believe that gold and silver truly bottom and rally to over 1,400 once the Fed actually reverses policy to rate cuts and QE and the dollar falls, especially against the Chinese renminbi. And I say actually because up until now, all we've had is a verbal reversal. I don't believe the Fed has reversed policy yet, quite the opposite. All I've heard is dovish talk to pump stocks higher, which could enable future rate hikes. Balance sheet reduction is going to continue at $50 billion per month until the end of the year, maybe sooner based on what Mester said this morning. But right now, the plan is still to continue to reduce the balance sheet. So other than not planning on a rate hike in March, at least not yet, nothing has changed. So the reason that stocks are going higher is because the market now believes the Fed has its back no matter what. But that may change overnight if the Fed tries to raise rates. That would be a wake-up call for the bulls, in my opinion. So what does this all mean to gold? The higher stocks go, the less likely the Fed is to actually reverse course, and the increasing risk that we head lower. All of that said, I don't believe stocks are done on the downside. We could see highs in the S&P around 3,000, but from there, I'm looking for new lows between 21 to 2,200 once the market realizes what the Fed is truly up to. Then when the Fed actually reverses course, likely later this year, my expectations is that gold will take off just as it did when QE1 and QE2 were rolled out. So that's the fundamentals. I'll switch to technicals and sentiment. This is more short-term in nature. We've had a sizable rally which peaked on January 31st at 1331, and DSI index, daily sentiment index, of 80% bullishness. This was also the 85.4% Fibonacci level of the decline from April through August, from 1360 to 1184 on a closing basis. It is also the 14.6 Fibonacci level of the entire rally from 1045 to the low in December 15 to 1377, the peak in August of 2016. So the confluence of major Fibonacci levels is a powerful tool. Now, we've got key support levels around 1280 and 1240 to 50 right now, and the obvious resistance is 1331. That goes all the way up to 1341. If we get through there, then we're likely to get a retest of the highs in the 1360s and 1370s. In my opinion, we could head straight down here or go up straight up to the 2016 high at 1377 and then fall. But we do need a decent pullback either way before we break up, given how far we've come in a relatively short space of time. So now, with regard to positioning based on the COT data, it's out of date currently due to the shutdown. But specifically, we don't know how long the money managers or funds were on January 31st or how short the banks and commercials are overall on that day. And this is critical to the next direction for gold. I went back and I looked at all of the major peaks and troughs in price since 2000. But for this analysis, for the COT data, I look at the aggregated or disaggregated data where it breaks down money managers and so forth, as opposed to just commercials and large specs. And having looked at 52 major peaks and troughs since 2006, the rate of change in the respective longs and shorts is at extremes since we bottomed at 1167 in August, which suggests a sizable pullback is coming. But then when you look at the absolute positions, we are still very much in bottom territory, meaning that the rally could continue. What this tells me in the absence of the data on January 31st is that either we get a pullback now or we head up to 1360 to 70 and then fall. I don't see us breaking the 2016 highs without a decent pullback first. And finally, and perhaps, you know, some would argue most importantly, intermarket analysis. The only major caveat to the higher gold thesis is a strong dollar, aided by an EU slowdown, political issues, and a weaker euro. I'm still looking for a peak in the Dixie at 98 to 99, or at most 101.60, then down to 80 next. This would support my expectation for a sizable pullback in gold before heading to new highs, but I could be wrong. If the dollar just continues straight up for whatever reason, even despite a Fed reversal in policy, an actual Fed reversal in policy to rate cuts and QE, then gold could go to new lows. And that's a remote possibility, in my opinion, Karim. Long term, I only see gold going much, much higher. With central banks all over the world buying gold, led by China and Russia, talk of QE infinity when the next crisis hits, and now MMT, modern money market theory, and even negative interest rates in the US, rampant inflation is likely, further devaluation of the dollar, and possibly the loss of its reserve currency status, all of which is perfect for gold. Put simply, I'm looking for a 4 to 8x increase in gold prices in the next 3 to 5 years, and at least double that in silver.
Okay, well, apart from gold and silver, are there any other commodities that you're keeping a close eye on? And does potential global recession worry you?
Not particularly, because the central banks respond to every recession by printing money. That's the new mantra. Well, it's not new. It's been around for quite some time now. But a recession doesn't worry me for commodities. Because I believe that when the next I'll be honest with you, Karim, I believe we've been in a recession since 2016. If you look at federal tax receipts since then, you will see that they are in and out of negative territory over that period. Federal tax receipts do not fall when the economy is growing. And some people will say, oh, well, Trump cut tax rates. He did that in 2018. He didn't cut them in 2016 and 2017. So it's apparent to me that despite all the rosy picture being painted by the Fed and the government statistics. The reality on the ground, when you look at credit card delinquencies, auto loan delinquencies, the housing market, and jobless claims, even unemployment. Unemployment is a lagging indicator. When that bottoms, if you go back and look at the Fed data, that's the New York Fed's website, or sorry, St. Louis Fed's website, and look at what happens every time either the jobless rate or jobless claims bottom. It's immediately followed by a recession. So everything to me points to an official recession in the short term. But to answer your question, I fully expect, and it's obvious, I've expected this for years, but and I posted a tweet back in November 2017 saying the Fed is absolutely going to ride to the rescue again when trouble hits. They have no alternative other than collapse. And you know, Powell has confirmed that. He confirmed it at Jackson Hole. He confirmed it in the FOMC minutes of August, and he's confirmed it again most recently with his complete about-face with regard to rate cuts and talk of ending the balance sheet reduction program early. So the Fed will ride to the rescue, as will, and ECB said they would taper their QE to zero as of December 31st. They're still doing QE. You've got the BOJ doing QE forever on QE 24 now. And then you've got the PBOC now, the Public Bank of China. They're ramping up their liquidity as well to stave off recession, and they got bigger problems because to the extent that unemployment spikes in China, they've got social unrest on their hands, and in a communist regime, that's the last thing you want. So cut a long story short, I expect the central banks to turn on the monetary spigots and unleash monetary insanity on steroids. This time around, you're going to get fiscal policy on top of that. It may not happen during the Trump era, or if it does, it will be in the form of infrastructure spending. But what we're hearing now with regard to this modern monetary theory is basically helicopter money, something which Mike Maloney predicted way back when, in 2005, following the risk of short-term deflation, the central banks, and I'm paraphrasing, the central banks and the governments around the world will resort to helicopter money. And that's what MMT essentially is. So you're pretty much guaranteed inflation, more paper money chasing the same amount of product or goods and services. Well, what happens to commodities in that environment? They skyrocket. Same way gold and silver are going to take off. I expect the likes of oil, cocoa, coffee, cotton, sugar, soybeans, wheat, platinum, palladium. Palladium's already taking off, but I expect all of the rest of them to follow suit once the Fed actually reverses policy and joins the rest of the world central banks in printing money again.
So, David, you've told me that you like to focus on data to maintain objectivity in trading and investing. So let's talk about that for a minute. Is it a mixture of fundamental analysis and technical setups that give you the information required for an investment? And tell us how you obtain a sense of objectivity when a lot of investors only see what they want to see when they're looking at a chart or a technical setup.
Well, I don't use just fundamentals and technicals. They are definitely a core part of my analysis, but I would say I use a holistic process. By that, I mean I don't confine myself to one tool or another. If you look at it, most analysts out there are religious about the tools they use, be it fundamentals, technicals, Elliott waves, sentiment, positioning, demarks, and intermarket analysis. For me, rather than getting into a debate about whether one is better than the other, they're obviously all widely used for a reason. They each have their merits, so why not use them all? That's what I do. I look for confluence of signals from all of them, or simply put, if they all point in the same direction, be it up or down, then you can have a great deal of confidence in your view. This is why I began buying physical gold and silver for the first time in the second half of 2015, and why I predicted a crash in equities in October last, 8 months earlier in February. By using several tools such as these and focusing on the data, I can ignore the noise in the marketplace and remain objective when others succumb to their positions, talk their book, as it were, or their inherent biases. For instance, gold bugs are always bullish, it seems. Well, I own gold and I'm not. Gold is a great example in the sense that I am long physical gold as an investment, and I won't be selling until it's multiples higher. But I trade both sides of gold in the short term. This also enables me to remain objective. One last point on this. I use sentiment as one of my tools in trading, and this works particularly well in gold. When everyone gets uber bullish, gold tends to fall, and vice versa, when gold is extremely bearish, it tends to rise. The daily sentiment index is excellent for signaling peaks and troughs in sentiment when everyone else is cheerleading gold and chasing the price higher or lower. Case in point, on January 31st, when gold peaked at 1331, the DSI hit 80%, and it fell back from there.
Let's talk a little bit about some of your winners and losers throughout your career and perhaps why they turned out that way. Investors tend to always learn a lot more from the pain of a trade or investment that went against them. So throughout your career, David, what major lessons have you learned and that you could share with us?
All right. So in terms of winners, gold and silver, I bought at the lows in December 2015 and I've been adding ever since. The rationale behind that was I was just following my FIPES process. And no one was bullish or bearish these metals in the second half of 2015. Simply no one cared anymore. No one was looking at them. This is what attracted me to them. And when I looked at them from a complete FIPES sense, it was a no-brainer to buy, in my opinion. I shorted stocks before October last year, around mid-year. Not as much as I'd like. I expected it to hit 3,000. It fell short of that target and ran away from me. But I covered many of the reasons why I was shorting stocks and why I had that view in February in online interviews and an article for Sprout Money, mostly fundamental for why I expected this and when, but also provided the signals I was monitoring to suggest when it would hit, and it did, just as expected. And I could go on all day. I've had many successes in various asset classes, but I'm also learning all the time from my own unprofitable trades. But fortunately for me, and this is another valuable lesson, I limit those losses either with stop losses or through the use of puts when I'm selling or call options when I'm buying. Allow your profits to run and cut your losses. This is the best advice and the toughest as it goes against human nature. When having difficulty cutting your losses, always remember that it means that you live to fight another day. You can make it back in the next trade. Biggest failures, pushing my short position in stocks in late 2015, 2016, early 2016. I still came out ahead, but I gave up a lot of gains in the process. I'll never forget that announcement of an OPEC deal to curb production just as the S&P was hitting 1810 and up we went. And I was a bit slow to pull my profits. But that was probably one of my biggest failures that I can remember that's most recent.
As we begin to wrap up the show, David, is there anything else you wish to talk about or discuss today? Anything else on your mind?
Well, the main thing to focus on is the narrative and to apply second level thinking. And what I mean by that is don't just take everything on face value. Read between the lines. So the principal factor to watch today is the Fed. And the Fed is talking dovish right now to pump markets, but pump stock markets in particular. But I believe this is to enable further rate hikes and to continue cutting the balance sheet. Because put a different way, if the Fed continued with its hawkish stance when we were at 2346 in the S&P, we'd probably now be around 1600 or 1500. Now they're talking dovish. Everything is verbal. They're talking about ending the balance sheet reduction process. They're talking about pausing. But at the same time, they're saying the economy is great. It's wonderful. There's just some cross currents out there. I say this. I believe the Fed is going to try to raise rates at least once, maybe two more times this year. But they know how bad the economy really is on the ground. And they're just trying to build ammunition for the crisis they already know is coming. And that's what the market seems to miss. Why is the Fed so dovish all of a sudden? Why are they making these statements? Why? And it's not, they've been saying this actually since August. And even in Powell's nomination speech back in November of 2017, he said that they would do everything they had to prevent basically a meltdown in the US when the next crisis hits. And he'd been talking about using the same tools again, QE and so forth. And now it's going to be aided by MMT if the political policymakers get their way. That they were going to ride to the rescue in the event of a crisis. Well, if everything is so wonderful, why are you talking about, you know, rescue measures? It's not. And I think we've seen the first leg of this crashdown in the Q4, started in October, ended in December. And now we're seeing what we call an Elliott wave theory, an ABC count, which is a wave four correction of the rally since 2009. And we had wave A down in Q4. We've got wave B up now. That's currently ongoing. And it could reach 3,000 or slightly above. But wave C is coming, in my opinion. What would precipitate it? When the Fed tries to raise rates one more time and then maybe price in another rate, either in September or December. Then the market may decide, wait, hold on, I thought you were on our side, and then it reverses. But there are so many catalysts out there, given how fragile the world economy is. I mean, I could go on all day, but you've got Deutsche Bank, you've got petrodollar, you've got the end to the petrodollar, that is. You've got the trade war, problems in Europe. There's so many issues that could bring down the market. But I would try to focus on the narrative in terms of what's moving the markets currently, but see beyond that to see where markets are headed. And I emphasize, of all the tools that I like the most, it's sentiment. When people become overly exuberant on one side, as we saw 29.41 S&P at the start of October, or you saw gold at, you know, numerous peaks in the past 3 years, it tends to go in the opposite direction. And the same when people become uber bearish. Well, right now, we are going back to uber complacency in the stock market. Everybody believes the Fed has their back. We're only going straight up and so forth. Well, we saw that in 2017, and then we got a wake-up call in 2018. We're going to get another wake-up call. And the reason for that is, in order for the Fed to reverse policy, do a 180, actually reverse policy to QE and rate cuts, they need an excuse. And an excuse would be another crash in stocks. And that's what I would recommend people focus on going forward. With regard to gold, when that reversal, actual reversal comes, I think gold shoots higher. Now, one caveat to that is we need to see the dollar fall. And I expect it will. And I expect a repeat of what happened when QE1 and QE2 were introduced. But it's not just one factor. It's not just the reversal. You need to see the dollar tank from there. And then I think gold will shoot higher. And those are my two primary focal points. Commodities, they will take off as well. I just don't think that they're going to take off as much as gold and silver will. Bonds, that's a different animal. Because on the one hand, you're going to have QE and there's going to have the government buying government bonds and potentially corporate bonds and student debt and so forth. But at the same time, there's a risk that if the dollar falls, there's a loss of confidence in U.S. assets, and that includes U.S. treasuries, and yields may spike. So I'm not active in bonds beyond the short term. My focus is on stocks, precious metals, and commodity. And the other last point I would make is I expect oil to hit triple digits, perhaps this year, but certainly next. Yeah, that's my opinion.
Very good. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time today, David. Much appreciated. I'm sure we'll have you back on the show again later in the year.
Thanks, Karam. Appreciate your time.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people? Hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip-your-face-off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?